Hi, this is John Udell. My guest for this week's podcast is Tony Hammond, who works with the new technology team at Nature Publishing Group. His company publishes a flock of scientific journals in print and online, including, most prominently, Nature. It also operates Conatia, a social bookmarking service for scientists. In this week's podcast, we talk about digital object identifiers, which are, in effect, super URLs designed to survive commercial churn and to work reliably for hundreds of years. Many of us are becoming publishers nowadays, and we'd like to imagine that all our stuff could enjoy that level of consistency and durability. Few of us are prepared to make the necessary investment, but it's interesting to hear from someone who has. Hey, Tony.
Hi, John.
Thanks for agreeing to do this. I've been wanting to speak with you for a long time.
Thanks for inviting me.
I had an incident back in August, it was, that kind of tied together a bunch of the different themes that I want to talk about today. So what happened is that I was talking with someone about this idea that the proportion of human to bacterial cells in the human body is 10-90. In other words, we're 90% bacterial in terms of the number of cells
right. In
our body. And it was timely because there had been an article in the New York Times magazine that focused on this. It was about how the microbial fauna could be related to food metabolism. For some reason, I got interested in how this meme about human-bacterial hybrid had been flowing through the network and through the academic world and through the popular press. And so I looked around, and it seemed that in the popular world, it was a Wired magazine article that was the source. And that article, however, cited a piece in the Nature Biotechnology Journal. That's one of yours, right?
That's right.
Yeah. And so I looked at the original article, and nobody in the blogosphere, nobody in the popular press had actually linked to the article. It was cited, but nobody actually linked to it. And so I'm dead certain that hardly anyone that read any of the popular articles ever actually took the trouble to go to nature.com and find the thing and read it. When I did go to Nature and did find the article, it of course had a DOI, a digital object identifier associated with it, and all sorts of nice properties related to that were available in the context of your presentation at nature.com, which are properties that I argue the blogosphere and the sort of the popular web would do well to emulate, because we don't really have a very good way of reliably citing things and collecting the references to things and so on. And in your world, that's job one, right? You guys really, really focus on that and do an incredibly good job of it. And I thought that it was unfortunate that some of your technology hasn't made its way out into the mainstream. And maybe we can just start there and you can tell me a little bit about what the DOI system is and what it does for people.
It would be useful to start with, especially for me, because in a sense, we've come full circle with this right now, because one of the current projects I'm involved with is digital objects, but seen from a library perspective rather than a publisher perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to the publishing problem, that was foreseeable already back in 94, 95. The web hyperlink architecture was seen to be not as stable as the scholarly community would have liked.
Mm-hmm.
There was a white paper that was put out to review the problem by the American Association of Publishers. And following that, I believe in about 96, there was a tender put out to bid for a system to implement a persistence linking structure.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually that was won out by CNRI with the handle system.
CNRI being?
The Corporation for National Research Initiative,
mm-hmm.
based in Reston, Virginia.
Yep.
They had been doing work under Bob Kahn. Bob Kahn is one of the pioneers of the Internet, along with Vint Cerf. He worked on TCP/IP.
Mm-hmm.
They were especially interested in digital objects and architecture. And as part of that, they needed a directory service to access digital object repositories. And that was the handle system.
I gather that there is still some discussion about whether or not, or the degree to which, there is necessarily a separation between the handle system and the URI or URN, Universal Resource Naming System.
Yes.
So for people who have not seen a DOI, I'll just kind of try to summarize and then you can correct me, but it looks a little bit URL-like. It's a construct with slash separated elements and identifiers and things at the end that look like file names and often correspond to file names, and things at the beginning that are made up of numbers or dotted concatenations of numbers, which are a little bit more like a library Dewey Decimal kind of system.
That's right. It's basically a Unicode string. The key element in it is a slash, which separates out the prefix, which identifies the naming authority, from the suffix, which is a local name given by the naming authority.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly within the DOI space, initially there was a preoccupation that the handles, the opaque identifiers, essentially numbers. There were precedents for this for the ISSN, the International Standard Serial mm-hmm. Number, and the ISBN, the Standard Book Number.
So to give an example, the article that I was talking about has the DOI of 10.1038/NBT1015. So the NBT is Nature Biotechnology, 1015 is some serial number within that. And then ahead of the slash, the 10 is the DOI subset of a potentially larger handle namespace.
That's right.
Okay.
Within the handle space, the 10 identifies a DOI
okay.
To a local server. And the 1038 identifies the publisher at the time the DOI was created.
Okay. And so in that case, the publisher is the specific journal, or it is Nature Publishing Group in general?
In this case, it would be Nature Publishing Group.
Okay.
But it's important to note that this is the publisher at the time that the DOI was minted.
Okay.
Because in a commercial environment, journal titles are traded, and another publisher may at this time have a particular title.
Okay.
So with the DOI, one should treat it as an opaque string, and one should try not to read any information from it. Although in practice, what one does infer a certain amount of casual metadata, if you like. For example, NBT,
right.
One can see as a journal code, and then it's followed by a serial number.
Right, which is important because these things are printed, and they do appear. These identifiers are evident to human beings.
Exactly so. What we have followed, we have also subsequently revised our syntax further to make it more amenable to human transcribability, if you like.
Okay.
And many other journal publishers have done the same. Some started out with legacy schemes, but subsequently they began to see the benefit of having shorter, kind of snappier identifiers.
Yeah. So to complete the picture here, the full DOI looks like, I guess, DOI colon 10.1038/NBT1015, and the DOI colon says that it's a DOI, and in practice on the web, what that means is that that identifier needs to get resolved, and the DOI.org resolver is the one that's, I don't know, there may be others, but that's one that I see all the time. So the URL then looks like HTTP colon whack whack dx.doi.org/10.1038/NBT1015, where the resolver at doi.org is returning, and this is actually kind of interesting, so you should explain what this process of resolution is and what can be returned.
Okay, so the handle system defines a wire protocol for a delegated naming authority lookup service. The dx.doi.org is an HTTP gateway into the handle system.
Mm-hmm.
That is just to facilitate linking from web pages,
mm-hmm.
but one can query directly into the handle system using the appropriate tools. And there is also some support for browser plugins if they recognize the DOI. A native query to the handle system would return a handle record. A handle record is a very complex affair,
mm-hmm.
Series of key value pairs.
Yep.
Each also has an index, and there is administrative information associated with each record.
At what IP address would I find a native handle server?
The handle system is rather like the DNS system. It's a hierarchical architecture.
Mm-hmm.
There is a global server.
Okay.
So if one uses native handle protocol, it will query the global server or the root server to look up a local naming authority
okay.
for a DOI. That would be a 10.
Okay. So it's a DNS-like infrastructure, which is, however, different from DNS because, I guess, partly the administrative requirements and the granularity.
It's much finer granularity, and basically each record can be adminned, and even each field within a record. There can be different access rights.
Mm-hmm.
Which leads us to something that has long been discussed within the DOI world, a subject called multiple resolution.
Mm-hmm.
Because in principle, it is possible to resolve a handle identifier or a DOI implemented on top of the handle system into a number of components.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, it could resolve not to one URL, but it could resolve to three or four URLs.
Yeah.
Or to other pieces of key metadata, for example, an email address, or it could even be a complete XML document or what have you.
I fear that so far this will sound very abstract to people, but it's incredibly concrete. And so let me just give an example that will help make it concrete, because this happens in the regular sort of web publishing world all the time. I publish a video on the internet, and what I want to have happen is I want, as far as possible, to have a canonical URL for that thing, because when people cite it, I want all of the citations to cluster around that canonical URL. It's not so easy to accomplish that, though. It's quite common that the video will have to be published in multiple formats, and so there's a QuickTime version of the thing, and there's a Windows Media version of the thing, and there's a Flash version of the thing, and those are all at probably related but still different URLs. And then there's also usually some sort of an abstract which introduces the thing, and that itself has a URL. And now in general, kind of the best that you can do on the web right now is try to be very disciplined about using the URL of what I'll call the container, right, the abstract, and try to present that as a canonical thing. But it's really hard to do that for a lot of different reasons. You know, content management systems have a way of generating different URLs that ultimately resolve to the same thing. You know, there are lots of different ways in which we can sort of multiply handles to web resources. So from that perspective, it'd be incredibly helpful if you could step back from that and say, here is this abstract identifier, which refers to this work. You would think, well, it'd be like an ISBN, but it isn't even that, because, of course, an ISBN doesn't refer to the set of manifestations of a work. It refers to an individual edition of a work.
Correct.
So even in book publishing, you know, we don't actually have, at least in general, we don't actually have this notion of a single canonical thing which can resolve to multiple related instances or manifestations.
That's right. And in fact, DOI is part of the story that arose from work into digital object architectures, in which they were looking at precisely this kind of problem. They were looking at the notion of compound digital objects, which would provide services. For example, one might request, give me page 4 in PDF format, or give me a description, a metadata description, or give me the HTML rendering.
Mm-hmm.
So DOI has its roots in that research.
Mm-hmm.
The initial problem that the publishing community was trying to solve was that of persistence. So the DOI, as currently implemented, is just performing a very basic, rudimentary redirect service, which vanishes away the reliance upon a particular DNS name.
To an outsider, it would look as though there is a heavy reliance on the resolver.
At that moment, it is implemented using the handle system. In theory, other systems could be used behind the scenes, as it were.
That's not what I meant. What I meant is, if I look at this thing and it says dx.doi.org, right? That's the DNS name.
That is just one entry point. It is one service to access the information associated with the DOI. So one could have a native handle query, or one could have alternate services that would be able to provide that information.
Okay.
The persistence identifier is the DOI itself, the 10.1038 slash whatever.
Yeah.
So that is guaranteed to remain the same, even if nature biotechnology, for example, were to change hands.
Okay.
Unlikely, but for example, in the reverse case, we have also acquired titles from other publishers with their own DOIs. Those DOIs would have prefixes which were generated by other publishers, but we take them on board and use them without alteration.
How many, what would you call it, handle services or servers exist?
I couldn't say offhand.
If the service which is behind dx.doi.org were to fail...
There is replication. I don't know the exact numbers.
Okay. in principle, although the current implementation at nature.com, for example, is that the DOI for that article resolves to the abstract. And the abstract, in this case, is an HTML page, which would point to the, you know, the PDF version, to the to the HTML version, potentially other things, right? So it's a, you know, so the DOI resolves to the container or the wrapper, but in fact, under the covers, the DOI probably is returning all of the elements, right? All of the contained things. Is that true?
No, that isn't true at the moment. But
okay.
Yes, it could be true.
Okay.
Maybe I should sort of back up. So the DOI initiative is governed by the International DOI Foundation, which was set up in, I think, 1998.
Mm-hmm.
Underneath the umbrella of the DOI Foundation, there are a number of registration agencies. The most significant for us is Crossref, which is concerned with scholarly publishing.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, was very concerned and still continues to be with journals and journal articles, but has since grown to new content types such as conference proceedings and books and book parts.
Okay.
Crossref itself is an application to perform a DOI lookup service. If a publisher has a series of references at the end of an article,
mm-hmm.
these have metadata elements. They have a journal title, a volume, a page number, an author, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
A query can be built using those elements, sent off to Crossref, and a DOI, if available, can be returned for that.
Okay.
The DOI can then be used by the publisher to build a permanent link in their reference list.
Okay.
And that reference link will go to whichever platform is currently hosting that work.
Okay.
So even if the work is traded in a period of years, that DOI will still went to the right place or to the right work. You'll still identify the right work.
Okay.
Crossref currently has something just short of 25 million records. So there's 25 million strategic resources, what one might say.
And those that are contributed to it by your publishing operation at Nature are injected into the system how?
Just as part of the publishing workflow,
mm-hmm.
we deposit metadata records with Crossref,
mm-hmm.
which also contains the DOI. Again, we also query Crossref for each article, for each of the references that occur at the end of an article,
mm-hmm.
so that we can build permanent links from those. So Crossref supports both a deposit function and a query function.
So the query function is a sort of a bootstrap, which is bringing articles which weren't referenced with DOIs into the realm of ones which can be.
That's right.
Okay.
Although I guess in practice it would be fair to say that most references would be queried, that not many references are supplied with DOI.
Right, okay.
Being a fairly new initiative and references typically being somewhat older than the article.
As a publisher, is this kind of like being a book publisher where you would register for a block of ISBNs and then you're responsible for filling up that block as you produce new things?
Similar. Different in the sense that an ISBN is allocated in a block, as you say, whereas a DOI publisher is at liberty to choose whatever suffix string they like.
Okay. So suppose I wanted to be a DOI publisher. Can I do that?
Yes. As I said, the DOI prefixes are managed by registration agents. The principal registration agent that we deal with, though, is Crossref.
Okay.
As for being able to join Crossref, that there is a fee associated with that. Typically, it would be a publisher who would register with Crossref.
Mm-hmm. That's actually where I'm going with this, is that a lot of us are publishers nowadays.
Yeah.
And ultimately, we all have an interest in persistence.
Sure.
I'm wondering whether there is or will be some sort of free, open version of this infrastructure that could be used by, for example, the world of blogging.
You mentioned the word free, and we'd all like things to be free. The DOI system and the Crossref referencing linking service is free to end users. There are costs associated with maintaining the infrastructure,
right.
which are borne by the journal publishers,
right.
because obviously there are servers, there are personnel to manage those servers, etc. But in terms of end users being able to follow links based on the DOI, that is
right.
totally free. And there is also a free query service through Crossref now. certainly sort of volume queries by publishers, there are costs associated with that.
It would be interesting to do that experiment. What would it take for me to have the ability to associate a DOI? And part of the reason I ask is that I was just looking up handle.net, and apparently the infrastructure software that powers that system is now available.
That's right. The handle system is freely available, or I believe there is a nominal charge, maybe $50.
Yeah.
Well, while the DOI system makes use of the handle technology for resolution, it should be emphasized that a DOI is more than the handle system per se. It is a system of governance.
Mm-hmm.
That there is metadata associated with the records. The handle system itself is really just a resolution technology. Just going back, the primary focus so far with in the publishing space has been to focus on this problem of indirection, or redirection rather,
mm-hmm.
to break the reliance upon a particular domain name.
Mm-hmm.
We do have the possibility of this multiple resolution.
Okay, so an example of this would be that I could populate the system with an instance that points to my PDF and an instance that points to my HTML and an instance that points to my audio.
Exactly that.
For the same work.
More interesting problems occur when one has relationships between various objects.
Mm-hmm.
And a very simple case would be a journal article and then an erratum to that journal article. And both of those would be published as separate articles, each with their own DOI.
Mm-hmm.
But if that relationship were preserved within the sort of DOI record or the handle record, then in principle it would be possible to query a journal article and it would know that it had been updated or corrected in forward time.
Mm-hmm.
We have identified many key strategic assets or journal articles, but we haven't done such a good job in building up a network of relations between those objects.
Okay.
So we have something like 25 million singletons out there.
Okay.
And we need to set up some kind of dating agency.
I suppose Konnotia, which may be described as the scientific delicious, is one mechanism for doing lots of association among those things, right?
Yeah, we're certainly looking to see what we can get from that service.
So tell us a little bit about Konnotia and how it is both like and unlike something that will be familiar to most of the listeners here, like Delicious.
Konnotia, being a scientific delicious, is concerned with references. And when Konnotia recognizes a bookmark or a URI as coming from a particular platform, it will attempt to go and get authoritative metadata for that URL.
Mm-hmm.
So if it is a Nature DOI or a Nature journal article that has been bookmarked,
yes,
it will know that it can query the Nature repository to get bibliographic citation.
Mm-hmm. And see, I wish that we had this operating in the general web space. I run into examples of this all the time. Just the other day, I ran into one it's the kind of thing that most people don't think about, but it really bugs me. So I'm working with Microsoft now, and I'm working with a part of the company that does a lot of publishing. It does a lot of publishing of audio and video. And one of the things I was trying to do was a citation analysis of who was referencing some of these things. And in the course of doing that, I discovered that the content management system had published different spellings of the same URI. The difference was only one of case sensitivity, but that still mattered for Delicious. And so what you had was different pools of citations in Delicious that were about the same thing, but they weren't connected. I think about this a lot. And so there's sort of two ways that you can imagine trying to deal with this problem. One would be to just continue to operate in normal web space and just be more aware of naming discipline and URL consistency. That would help. It would probably help a lot. The other would be to go to a different system like yours. What do you think would be the trade-offs there?
I'd like to give you an analogy if I can.
Sure.
Or it makes sense to me.
Sure.
I don't know about anybody else. To my mind, the web landscape that we see out there is rather like the early universe. It's very, very flat, very homogenous.
Yeah.
And typically, there is one URI for one given representation. So I have a URL for my HTML version, I have a URL for my PDF,
yeah,
etc.
Yeah.
Now, our problem in the scholarly community especially, but also I believe elsewhere, is precisely the one you identified before. How do we associate like-minded resources?
Mm-hmm.
How do we introduce a certain sort of clumpiness into the this homogenous universe?
Exactly.
How do we build out some intelligence in terms of, in the universe we have galaxies, we have stars, we have these kind of perturbations in the otherwise sort of flat landscape.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the problem that the OII project, Object Reuse and Exchange, is trying to address. We had an initial meeting 2 weeks ago in New York, and we have a 2-year funding on that. But basically there is a small selected group of people from the digital library communities, academic communities, a couple of publishers, a couple of others interested in data publishing.
In a world where you're very disciplined about assigning digital identifiers and using them, then you are already in a position to enjoy the benefit of, for example, being able to resolve a canonical reference into multiple instances, right?
In theory, yes, but in practice, no. First of all, the DOI is an initiative which is largely coming from the publishing or content communities.
Mm-hmm.
The initiative for the object reuse and exchange is coming from the library community.
Okay.
We also have a very keen interest in being able to identify resources which are closely related.
Okay.
DOI is part of the picture. The handle system is part of the picture. The important thing, I think, is to be able to arrive at a consistent data model that will allow us to express related resources and representations.
Okay.
And associate those with a canonical URI, and maybe talk also to how we can acquire services.
In terms of the handle system, though, as I understand it, it is, in effect, a pointer to an array of things.
That's right.
Okay.
Yes.
So at least in terms of that simple data model, you have that capability, right? To say this pointer resolves to this list or this array of things.
It basically points to a list of, data
okay.
items.
Okay.
There is no innate relationship between those data items.
Mm-hmm. And you don't necessarily know what kinds of things.
Unless one can impose on top of that some kind of mapping.
Okay.
The big problem we have is really a semantic problem, how to express relationships between various data items.
Okay.
Or between various URIs, their representations.
Right. Or even maybe just to characterize the items. And so, you know, how would you say that the item at index 3 is, an audiobook?
Exactly. Or how to say that the URI is an item which updates the resource pointed at by that URI.
Okay. Okay.
This is a problem that is undergoing some active research and development, we hope. DOI is part of that picture. Certainly this kind of work has been going on for 10 years and more.
So given that we all experience some version of that problem,
yeah.
What's your feeling on how these principles are going to play out in kind of the mainstream of the web?
I guess that really depends on what kind of imperatives there is behind it.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, the scholarly community has a care of duty to maintain these complex links and to persist them through time.
Mm-hmm. Ideally, we should all have that kind of infrastructure available to us.
Ideally, yes, but there are certain costs associated, for example, with maintaining a central database like Crossref.
Mm-hmm.
That has to be defrayed somehow.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit like big physics. The problems, I hope I don't come over sounding arrogant, but some of the problems that we're trying to solve are to do with what I would call strategic resources, objects that we want to be able to reference even hundreds of years from now.
Mm-hmm.
This is very different from many commercial applications. For example, a website put up to promote a launch of a particular movie, which may have a lifetime of days, months.
Right. You're right. Much, if not most, of what happens on the open web today is pretty transient and pretty ephemeral. But, one can choose to regard one's publishing activities on the web as not that way. That's how I feel about what I do. I've been very much interested in having consistency and persistence about what I do in web space. And you're right, there has never been so far, and probably won't be anytime soon, the absolute requirement to invest at the level that your community is investing. So then my interest really is, how can I look at what you folks are doing, appreciate the principles that are there, and adapt those principles in as lightweight a way as possible, understanding that it isn't going to be the full system, but you know, how much of the benefit, in other words, of the systems that you operate can be transplanted into my world in a way that is practical?
Yeah, I don't have any easy answers for that. There is a big sort of industry effort, and even, well, let's just give it an industry effort, to maintain and curate the valued assets, which goes beyond any single enterprise, even Microsoft or Google. So this is a collaboration. There is an expectation that that system will be managed and that those identifiers will still be available many years hence.
Yeah.
Because of the commitment that has been put into this by the publishing community.
Somebody involved with this effort at some point should give one of those monthly talks at the Long Now seminars. Do you know about this?
No.
There's a thing called the Long Now Foundation. It's Stuart Brand and a number of other people in San Francisco got the idea that it would be really good if there were a way to sort of focus people's attention on the idea that we're sitting in the middle of a 20,000-year cycle, right? So if there's been 10,000 years of human evolution to this point, how do we think about the next 10,000 years? It's a perspective that we could all use more of.
Okay, I should take this out immediately.
You really should. You're absolutely operating in that kind of mindset.
Okay, well, thanks a lot again.
All right.
Okay.
Have a good day.